Tokyo, Australia, Germany, Africa.
Here we go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! We go. This first full week of September comes to a close for the Horn with this Friday on the front porch. It is the 11th day of September 2015, and headonradionetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go to jump into the chat room where the real-time live multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat takes place between the hours of 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Good evening to Earther and Little Gray. Early to the room. Thorn in the Prayer Porch Monday? What? No. Don't confuse me, Earther. Dang it. Welcome to the room, Doctor Who. More folks will be wandering along presently. Yes, indeed. And, of course, the chat room, capably moderated by long-time, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky. Lottie may be along in a little bit as well. They've been managing the room for quite some time. It is, of course, Friday on the front porch. That means that in an hour or so, or maybe a little bit more, I'm not sure, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, which is a rousing good time, and it happens primarily on Skype, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, as moderated for lo these many years by Sparky. If you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, just send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk. Sparky Dunk on Skype, and you'll, before you know it, you'll be part of the rousing good time that is the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. And hey, Bike Gated just wandered into the room, as did Jug of Punch. Welcome aboard. And I have a feeling we're going to have an abundance of stuff to talk about this evening on Friday on the Front Porch. I've got a few things lined up, a few reflections on what this date is. Yeah. As well as a few other things as we move toward the second and third hours of the program. Of course, the ever-present reminder is there that this is listener-supported, progressive, independent radio. That means that if it doesn't happen, if the bills don't get paid by your kind contributions, we don't stick around. This is the, no ads, no, you know the usual. Sorry, we don't have any Bose Wave radios around here, or ads for them, or mattresses made of Swedish mattresses made of foam developed by NASA. Sorry, but that's just how it is. It's just it's listener contributions with the occasional premium gift thrown in, just as a matter of appreciation. We've got some of those on the table right now. And it would be wonderful if we had some folks who wanted to partake of them, participate in them. A couple of them are already committed. But we have, as I mentioned before, we have some original movie posters from the documentary film, the very compelling documentary film, The Last Mountain. These are full movie poster sized, and they're the original deal. We had some left over from years ago when we were helping to promote the film. I was in the film for about 3.9746 seconds, and if you'd like, I will be happy to sign it or not sign it, as you may prefer. And anybody who kicks in a $200 have a show on me gets one. These things are actually for sale out there on the interweb tubes at considerably less money, I must admit, but they ain't signed by me. So if you want to do a $200 contribution to the equipment fund, which is still open and ongoing, as we're trying to add a couple of fixes in, not the least of which is getting the old Comrex taken care of, and then the, it's pretty much, repairs or new guts to a new computer that doesn't much care for running Windows 10 at a 32-bit, on 32-bit architecture. So that's what that is. Either way, if you want it, just send me an email or put a note in a contribution saying, you know, send it to me. There are several. I don't have hundreds of them, but there are several. Like I said, some are committed. But beyond that, you know, if you're able, whatever you can share to help make this available to everybody, because, you know, there are no subscriptions here. And we don't charge anybody for anything because we're not selling anything. This is not a capitalist, profit-driven enterprise. We're just trying to keep the program on the air. And thus far, to that extent, the model has worked. I mean, there's no Gulfstream 5 parked in the hangar out back or anything. And dang it, the Maybach still isn't here, but, well, oh well. But as it is, we closed the program last night down, with $88.89 to go in fundraising. That got knocked down to $58.89, and I am happy to announce. I'm happy to announce that number has just been taken down to. Oh, dear God. So we got 58.89 minus 29.13. 9 minus 3 is 6. 8 minus 1 is 7. Okay, so 76. Carry the pie. To the dinner on the ground, I might add. And then 89, okay, and 750. Okay, so the fundraising goal now for this evening is $259.76. $259.76. Yay! Thank you, Carol. Thank you very kindly. All right, then. So if you want to help out, of course, you know that there's a tab called Contribute at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. That's where the PayPal interface is that includes a couple of fields there that you don't have to fill out. They want to know what you do working for Mr. Slate down at the gravel pits and that kind of stuff. You can ignore those. Just get to the next screen. Or if you prefer to help out via the United States Postal Service, you can mail your contribution, your gift, to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEY, WV 25801. Mm-hmm. Of course, those checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn and not to Bob Kincaid, as I never see them. That's stuff that Boss Man Wayne does. All right, so we've got the housekeeping out of the way. This is, of course, This is, of course, September the 11th, and it is a day that is filled with anguish, I think is safe to say. It is somber, I suppose. Well, I don't suppose. It is somber. It is a day remembered by those who lost loved ones in the entirely foreseeable, absolutely preventable attacks of that day. I'm sorry, I just see them that way. So let me go back to where my head is with this. Now, I was happily, okay, not so much, watching, I guess, what you would call my favorite morning news program, although I think favorite is not necessarily the appropriate verbiage for that, but it's the morning program that I watch, when MSNBC cut away to run an historical documentary. And they were using their own NBC Today Show coverage of the morning of September 11th, 2001. And in a way, well, the longer I watched, the more disturbed I became. One, because it was hours. I mean, this thing went on for a couple of hours. It was hours of reliving that morning. That beautiful, beautiful morning. And because I'm the kind of person I am, I immediately thought, you know, I wonder how many people are having their PTSD triggered by this. Or by the nationalized, ritualized way that we deal with it. For many people, September 11th, 2001 was a very, very personal thing, especially in New York City and in Washington, D.C. and Shanksville, Pennsylvania. It was deeply personal. And the nation, the entire nation, even out here in the hinterlands, grieved. I had college buddies that were working in New York City and was beside myself to know that they were okay. A few years later, we would begin this program, and we would come to know a lovely human being by the name of Maura. Maura was a constant presence, if not so much on the phone, then always listening and emailing. And Maura had been she worked in the financial district, and she had gotten a big lungful of the air, the dust that was the dust laden air of that day, and it had ruined her ability to breathe good air on this planet. And so my mind turned toward her. I remember when she passed away. She called us, you, me, us, the Horn family, she called us from her hospital room just to say hello and, in a way, I suppose, to say goodbye. And not too long thereafter, a good friend of hers, who was wrapping up her affairs, wrote to tell us that she had passed away, and how much the Horn Family Commune congregation had meant to her. So, as I began thinking back 14 years ago, necessarily one of the people I thought about was former New Jersey Governor Christy Todd Whitman. Funny how New Jersey has twice now been screwed by someone with the name Christy It was Christy Todd Whitman's Environmental Protection Agency under the reign of error of dim leader who declared that the air at Ground Zero in New York City was safe to breathe. And of course, the lie was put to that by the countless first responders, police, firemen and women, and a number of other people like Maura who breathed it and had their lives inexorably changed and shortened. We learned lessons about breathing dust on September 11th, 2001 that still continue to be taught to people up hollers here in almost level West Bicol, Virginia, and central Appalachistan generally. Yeah. But the documentary footage that MSNBC ran, and I didn't look around. I presume that other for-profit media operations were doing something similar. And so, anything I have to say about any other outlet, any other member of the for-profit media, is by definition speculative. But there was absolutely no, I mean, it wasn't a documentary because all it was sort of, it was an assemblage of raw footage. And as is the case every year, I had that creeping sense of dread that comes with the realization that that there would once again be a renewal of the paranoid faction that swears that, well, I don't buy, nobody believes the official version of September 11th, 2001. The question is how far out there you want to go with not believing it. And all of that stuff must be every bit as painful to the grieving survivors of that day as it is for, say, the parents of the children at Sandy Hook Elementary, when idiots holler, "False flag! False flag!" and scream that those little children really were not chopped into unidentifiable masses, hunks of human flesh. Yeah. It's got to be painful. But there was no context there. There was no inquiry into the larger impacts and effects of this day 14 years ago. I did hear a fascinating, they did show a clip of live coverage from Dim Leader, that man whom our dear friend Malloy refers to as Raisin Brain. That may be the best one. That may be the best descriptive ever for the Fortunate Son. But I saw a clip of Dim Leader. Remember, he was at, what was it, Booker Elementary in South Florida? And he was standing, a lot of little children around, some adults, and he said, I unfortunately have to go back to Washington, D.C. right now. Little chicken shit was scared even then. He didn't want to go to D.C. That's how he winds up in Louisiana and then Nebraska and finally Washington, D.C. Yeah, by comparison, it is as if with the treasonous forces of the South at the gates of Washington, D.C., Abraham Lincoln had decided he needed to take in the healing waters of, say, Green Bay. But that was in. Unfortunately, I have to go back to Washington, D.C. Unfortunately, I have to go and attempt to do my job, which, of course, I'm not going to do very well. But it was the absence of context. It was the stuff that they didn't mention, because I'm sure that would be deemed political, and, well, you know, it's still too soon to talk about who's really at fault for what happened on that day. There was no mention, of course, of the CIA daily briefing of August 6th, 2001, entitled Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S., which Dim Leader dutifully ignored. There was no talk of the fact that at the time when Kinda Sleazy Rice, goes great with Kinda Sleazy Chicken, declared no one could have imagined anyone would use planes as missiles. No mention of the fact that it was that very fact that led a, what was it, G7, G8, bingo, whatever, meeting to be in Italy to cause the U.S. delegation to be kept housed aboard a ship somewhere out in the Tyrrhenian Sea. Yeah. No context whatsoever. And in the absence of that context, an almost guaranteed inability to learn. And so I began asking, you know, why do you do this? Okay, because they had gone to a live shot of the memorial at Shanksville, PA, a live shot of the memorial at the Pentagon, a live shot of the memorial in New York City, a live shot of President and Mrs. Obama coming out of the White House for the moment of silence. And that is more than appropriate. I will offer no criticism of that whatsoever. But I remember January of 1986 and how the for-profit media then showed time after time after time after time after time after time the Shuttle Challenger exploding so that we could make sure that anybody who was related to anybody aboard that shuttle got to grieve and re-grieve and be re-traumatized and re-anguished time after time after time after time after time after time. And this felt a lot like that. Ferg happened to come in as that was rolling, and he said, "You know what I remember about it?" And I said, "What, son?" And he said, "Well, you know, I was 5. 19 now. I was 5, he said. And every morning at 9 o'clock, we would wait for the, in kindergarten, we would wait for the clock to time down to 9 o'clock, and we'd all yell, 'It's 9 o'clock, it's time to learn,' or something like that. Happy, smiling little children." And he said, "That's what I remember about that day, because shortly thereafter, one teacher came in and told another teacher, and they told it, and then they told us." And that's what he remembers. We were here at home. They, you know, it was just another school day. They didn't send the kids home early or anything. There was no real risk of a jetliner plowing into the grade school or into the New River Gorge Bridge, which is the current paranoid fantasy. Yeah, really. I remember well shortly after that most of the country was gripped in some fear that their local, that Osama bin Laden was going to turn their local Wally World into a heap of smoke and rubble, when it became pretty obvious that Al-Qaeda had shot its wad in that one operation. But this morning I thought about the fact that none of my children, born 1989, 1994, 1995, and 1997, have ever lived in a United States that was at peace, was, I mean, that's kind of bizarre. And to us, I mean, there's, I mean, okay, so here I am, I'm aged 52. My childhood was spent with the Vietnam War. That ended when I was, what, 12? Then we had that brief little interval with little pop-up hotspots like, you know, Republican got-to-get-your-war-on moments like Grenada and Panama. And then came Bush War One, and it's been all war all the time ever since, with no desire for peace whatsoever on the part of this country. And so that led me to think about the fact that my senator, Joe Manchin, recently announced that he was going to oppose the Iran deal, which means if it weren't for the fact that President Obama has once again outmaneuvered these clueless yahoos in the Republicans and their enablers in the Congress, if Joe Manchin had his way, my son, who knows, my daughters might very well be marching their happy asses off to another war in the Middle East, because that ultimately is what I was thinking about today. The horrors that were gone through by the people who died in the World Trade Center and at the Pentagon and on the plane in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Followed shortly thereafter by the fact that we attacked a country that had absolutely, this needs to be said probably more often than it is, we attacked a country that had absolutely nothing to do with September 11th, 2001's attacks. Our attack on the people of Iraq was the functional analog to what it would have been like had FDR declared war on Bolivia after December 7th, 1941. If you recall, some of the reporting and journalism and memoirs written in the aftermath of September 11th, you may recall that it on the day it happened, the Bush White House was saying, get us evidence that Saddam Hussein done this. You know, he tried to kill my daddy. Bastard. And what was his name? John, dang it. Read his book. Deputy Assistant National Security, came back and said, Mr. President, there is no evidence whatsoever that Iraq had anything to do with this. Well, go back and look until you find some. And so from that moment, we were the Bush administration was hell-bent into dragging us into a war that was based on the most pathetic tissue of miserable lies. And so today, it is more, we owe more than to remember just the victims of those three aircraft-based attacks. We owe the honor of memory to the thousands of American servicemen and women who gave their lives in a pair of misbegotten wars, most particularly the war against the people of Iraq, that had absolutely nothing to do with September 11th. We absolutely owe that. Richard Clark, thank you, Steve. Thank you, Richard Clark. Sent on a wild goose chase to come up with some pathetic shred of evidence by which to frame up Saddam Hussein because they ran afoul of La Familia Bush. Yeah. So on something like on September 11th of any given year, we should remember the victims. We should also remember as victims the American servicemen and women whose lives were wasted, thrown away like used up tinsel. And then we have to remember the million or so dead Iraqi civilians whose blood to this day coats the hands of George W. Bush and Richard B. Big Time Dick Cheney before he dicks you. And that decent human being's heart still beating in his chest. It's growing, I tell you. I'm going to live forever. Along the way, we were told that the terrorists hate us for our freedom. And we were told, go shopping. I imagine that there are, to this day, people in this country who still think that Saddam Hussein had something to do with 9/11 because of the masterful job that the Bush administration did of making people think that. Attention must be paid. And the sad thing is, we don't know the names of any, or hardly any, of the non-combatant innocent Iraqis we slaughtered. We did our dead level best as a country to not know about it at all. But I still remember the picture of that gray-bearded man carrying the broken corpse of his toddler daughter out of a place that used to be a house where some product of American ingenuity had recently landed and exploded. And thinking about the kid, 19, 20, 21 years old, who pushed a button aboard a submarine. That made that little girl get all dead. And for the American century, that day was probably our defining moment. Because we have been screwing up ever since. Our attack on the innocent people of Iraq gave birth to something called ISIS that bedevils that region even as we speak. ISIS is equipped with really cool, expensive stuff that the American military left and generously donated to the new Iraqi army, which became particularly proficient at throwing down weapons, holding up white flags, and running like hell, ripping off their uniforms. Because ISIS is head loppers. There's all kinds of stuff you have to remember on September 11th. if you really want to remember all of it and not simply rely on hagiographic footage that is offered up as some sort of sickening murder porn by the for-profit media. You have to remember the Saudis. Our dear, dear friends, the Saudis. Our partners in peace. The Saudis. The headloppers. Members of whose royal family quite probably helped to finance the attacks of September 11th, 2001. Who were allowed to scurry out of the United States when nobody else could get an aircraft in the air. Our friends, the oh-so-civilized Saudis, who, incidentally, who'd have thunk it, finance ISIS. Oh, yeah, I know. Dredge me in gravy and call me biscuit. But they do. Which brings us, of course, to a little bit of the news of the day. Namely, the collapse of a great big crane in Mecca. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia is, of course, in charge of that holiest of sites in Islam, Mecca. And Mecca is where sits the Grand Mosque, and it is a great big edifice. I mean, sure enough. And a building of that size and age is in need of constant repair. I mean, hell, the United States Capitol isn't nearly that old, and you'll note that it's the Capitol Dome, which was only finished during the Civil War 155 years ago or so, that's got scaffolding all around it right now because of maintenance. By way of remembrance, Arthur points out from the chat room, also, let's remember that 3,000 Americans died. Well, every year, 400,000 die from smoking. How many from accidents? How many from poverty? How many 9/11s in West Virginia? Yet we tore up Iraq and tore up the U.S. politically and economically. Civil liberties, torture, ultranationalism, all of that stuff. Yeah, absolutely, Arthur. So they were doing maintenance on the Grand Mosque in Mecca when a big, great, big crane collapsed today and killed a whole hell of a lot of the faithful. If you think I'm going to laugh or make some sort of a joke about that, I'm not. This is the wrong program. It's pitiable. Now, if it had actually happened to land on the little old noggin of His Royal, Serene, Noble, Majestic, Graciousness, Highness, the King of Saudi Arabia, then I might do some giggling. That noble headlopper, our partner in peace. Freaking barbarian. But no, the renovations were underway because the Hajj is a-coming, and that is the holy obligation that is imposed upon Muslims the world over, if they are able to do it, to go and make pilgrimage to Mecca. I mean, lots of Christians like to go to Jerusalem. They like to go to Bethlehem at Christmas time, even though there's no evidence that anything untoward or out of the ordinary happened around the winter solstice in Bethlehem 2,000 years ago. Every religion has its sacred sites, and Well, Mecca is it for Islam. So this crane topples over and kills a whole bunch of people and injures a whole bunch more because it came crashing right down through the roof of the Grand Mosque. Almost immediately, the right wing began giggling because they are a bloodthirsty lot who love them some death porn. One image put up on Twitter shows rainbow at WTC site on 9/10/15. Is there a rainbow in New York today? Really? And it sits side by side with Mecca hit by lightning 9/11/15. Showing lightning striking at the Grand Mosque. Of course, there's no way of knowing if either is true. If right-wingers are promoting it, it probably isn't. But that never slows them down from believing, because they are, after all, believers in stuff. The minute I saw that story break, I knew what was going to happen. I knew the right-wingers would be hollering that this was some sort of payback. If it's anything, it's proof that the goddess of irony is vacationing in the desert right now. But there's nothing particularly ironic about this, because the people who died today in Mecca had nothing to do with September the 11th, 2001. They, like my son, may have been so young that it's a distant memory at best of their childhood. Far more likely, they were many of the people injured or killed in that collapse were likely the folks upon whom the serene kingdom of the headloppers, the people upon whom they depend, namely foreign labor that they treat like slaves. Well, I mean, they have it. In Saudi Arabia, they still have real honest-to-goodness slaves, but never mind. Innocence. Indians, Filipinos, Malaysians, Pakistanis, people who are hired by capitalist predators to come and work for slave wages in the serene kingdom and be treated like crap. So the first thing that occurred to me was to wonder how many heads would be lopped by our partners in peace in retribution for this happening. Ron and Raleigh thinking the same way I do. Hey, Bob, do you think that crane operator's in line for a head lopping? Oh, I'd say. Brother Gerald asks, payback from whom, Bob? God? You'd think if God was going to pay back for 9/11/01, he would have done it on 9/12/01. Just saying. No one knows the mind of God, especially when you have to imagine it, Gerald. No, if anything, you know what? Here's something. I will hazard a guess that in that crane collapse in Saudi Arabia today, no atheists died. I'm sure that the loving, all know, sees all, knows all, forgives all, loves all, God, monotheistic God, only killed his own followers, Mecca being Mecca. I mean, it's kind of like when tornadoes blow through the places like Texas and Oklahoma and Missouri and Arkansas and Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama and whatnot. Mostly, I mean, if this is a world that's run by that Abrahamic monotheistic God, that God is wiping out his own believers, his own followers, his own beloveds, his own worshipers. So once again, that's true. Irish Dave pointing out, come on, Bob, 14 years is but a moment for God. Sure. But, I mean, if there's a takeaway for me out of this, it's stay away from churches and mosques. I mean, Allah, the all-knowing, all-comprehending, all-powerful, was unable to stop several mosques from being blown to kingdom come during our ill-fated invasion of Iraq. One guy says, on 9/11, lightning strikes Mecca, Grand Mosque, killing 65. Wrath of Allah? Another bloodthirsty right-winger described the crane collapse and 107 dead, according to RT, as the feel-good story of 9/11/15. Because, you know, it feels good when innocent people busting their asses just trying to keep their families fed. That feels good to a right-winger when they die. Because, you know, the right wing, they're Christians. Another God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian said, nice to see a good Old Testament smiting today. Scores killed by crane collapse in Mecca's Grand Mosque. Ironic that grandest building in country that funded and supplied the men for 9/11 collapses today. And someone called Citizen Roscoe, who has is apparently severely grammatically challenged, says, so we now know God ain't Allah, and it get 9/11 revenge, LMAO. Charming lot. Hey, Islam! Oh, this is from Bright Twit. B-R-E-I-T. Get it? You know, like bright fart. Hey, Islam! Shove it up your hodge! Dear Muslims, perhaps God is sending you a message. This particular idiot on Twitter has the Merkin flag as his or her avatar. You know, Merca. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. I send this offering to Mecca on 9/11. Toilet flush sound effect in high quality. Because America's right wing, well, stay classy, y'all. Stay classy. About 11 minutes before the hour, a reminder, if you want to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, I suspect that Sparky has the breadcrumbs and the bat signal out. Mm-hmm. And your thoughts and your conversational contributions are most welcome. Yeah, dang it. There we go. It's moving again. Marty pointing out also on this date, don't forget the innocent victims in Chile following the CIA-led, Kissinger-inspired, I might add, coup against a democratically elected leader, Salvador Allende, on September 11th, 1973. Mm-hmm. Subject line, Crane down, James writing in, they were 1 month out from the big show. High winds are hell on Crane. Someone on top was pressuring those who knew better. Probably were told that Allah would protect them. Sad day for all those affected. Yes. Incredibly sad. Usually when industrial accidents like this take place, there's somebody pushing somebody on account of money. I mean, okay, I mentioned the Challenger explosion. Does the name Morton Thiokol ring a bell? Does the phrase O-rings ring a bell? The fact that they were pushing and pushing and pushing and pushing for that launch to take off, even though it was brutally cold as far down as Cape Canaveral? Because money. Robert in Australia with a note. Subject line, just disappointed. Sometimes I'm just so disappointed in humanity that I want to get off this rock and not look back. Someday maybe we'll be able to. I'll fly away, oh glory. No, I'm not going to sing tonight. Note coming from Brother Deacon Asa. Happily returned to his bailiwick there in Vancouver. Maybe Saudi has secretly legalized the fagoot marriage, and God was getting back at him for it. Yeah, just remember. White Republican Jesus always has a plan. Because he loves them Muslims enough to kill them. And then send them to hell and torture them for all eternity. Because God is love. Let's take a moment. And run out to the Midwest. For a couple of stories. You may recall that, you may recall that the marvelously coherent Diane from Kansastan brought the Kansas State marching band story to our attention. With a marching enterprise attacking a stationary Jayhawk during the South Dakota football game and the ensuing kerfuffle that followed in its wake. Mm-hmm. Well, there's other foolishness afoot at great Midwestern universities. Of course, one of the great universities of the Midwest is the University of Iowa. Iowa City, isn't it? Well, they found themselves in need of a university president. And that's a heady kind of a position. And usually you get to be president of a great university like Iowa because you've established a track record of being president of, you know, busted knuckle state community college, and then you moved up to left elbow polytechnic, and did some journeyman work, and some, and then you reached the pinnacle of your career, a great Big Ten school like Iowa. Apparently, that has changed. University of Iowa needed a college president, and so they just called up a temp firm, apparently. Or, well, they're called headhunting firms. Executive search organizations. because God knows nobody there at the campus of the University of Iowa should be deemed competent to go and find their own university president to represent that great state. No, they hired a headhunting firm. And the head headhunter had a history of, well, you know, glad-handing and log-rolling and back-slapping, and had apparently, in the past, been a some sort of mid-level executive or something at NCR, National Cash Register. And so when the order came in, probably involving lots and lots of taxpayer dollars for this headhunting firm to go and find a new president for the University of Iowa, because I guess nobody was applying. I mean, who would want that job? Well, he went to his Rolodex trying to think of, you know, who would be great at this? Who would really, really bring the prestige and honor and dignity and respect that a great institution like Iowa deserves? And then he remembered back in his NCR days how once upon a time he sold some cash registers to this guy who had this idea that he was going to have a restaurant and he was going to serve pot roast and mashed potatoes and turkey and dressing and stuff. And he called it Boston Market. And the guy at the spunky little startup called Boston Market bought a whole bunch of NCR cash registers for his up-and-coming entrepreneurial extravaganza. And Boston Market became a rousing success for people who like to eat not particularly good, but somehow resembling home-style cooking. And so, thinking back, our headhunter said to himself, you know who I bet would be a great president of the University of Iowa? The Boston Market guy. No, I'm not kidding. I had absolutely no experience in academia. No experience running a university. No maybe he would have done a good job running food services at Iowa, but hell, I'll bet food services at Iowa have been farmed out to some godforsaken corporation. And so, bang, he's hired. And the faculty at the University of Iowa say, what? And before the guy can even get his seat good and warm, the faculty in the faculty senate at the University of Iowa has voted him like 1% confidence. But that's just because they're a bunch of mean old ivory tower intellectuals who don't know nothing about running Boston Market. I mean, the University of Iowa. Jeez. But of course, this is just another installment in the ongoing Republican saga of everything in America must be run like a business. Yeah, I think there was some reference to Enron last night, wasn't there? Mm-hmm. Remember when George W. Bush said that he wanted to run the United States government like Enron? And he did! Right into the ground! Just like Enron! Oh, I had no idea. Thank you, Randy. A little bit of background Boston Market used to be Boston Chicken before Boston Chicken went bankrupt. I've never lived anywhere near a Boston Market. I think I went to one time and was thoroughly unimpressed, but I did notice that Boston Market branded frozen food is now available in your grocer's freezer case. So you can have all that Boston Market goodness, straight out of your microwave. Idiots. So now we travel a little bit south and west to Kansastan. Yeah. I saw this story courtesy of Carol Baker. The dateline for the KCTV story is Tonganoxie, Kansas. And it's the story of Emily Snodgrass. She's 14 years old. Her name appears in the story, so I'll use it. Because she's actually trying to get some light to be shown on this particular issue. For some reason or another, young Emily, age 14, has been bedeviled by bullying since middle school. It happens, trust me. Her mom reported through middle school there were rumors that Emily was pregnant. Girls would come up and touch her belly. We were told to just ignore it and it would go away, because that's always the best way to deal with bullies. And the bullying never did go away, and last year, Emily made a suicide attempt. Well, she's a freshman in high school now. And last week, well, in the last week, a fellow student photographed her in the locker room. Her mother reported that she was only in her bra and spandex underwear. She didn't know she was being photographed. But whoever took the picture immediately put it up on Snapchat. And it and on Snapchat, it immediately zoomed around to all the Snapchats or all the Snapchat subscribers to that person. Whoever took the picture captioned it, "Exposed." Emily did not handle it well. She said, "I broke down into tears because there's all these people looking at me. I have really bad anxiety, and they're all telling me, 'Oh, have you seen this? Have you seen this?'" There are clicks of people in the hallway talking about it. The Tonganoxie School District, meanwhile, says, "Oh, we've severely disciplined the student who took the picture." Although there's no way to find out who that person is or what the nature of the discipline was and what constitutes severe to the Tonganoxie School District. Meanwhile, Tonganoxie School District Superintendent Lynn Rance said, "Sad news day if this is newsworthy. Kids need to come to school to be cared for and learn, but know when poor choices are made, it won't be on the evening news." Emily's mama feels like it's being swept under the rug. Meanwhile, Emily's mama also says there needs to be a change in school policy. They shouldn't allow electronic devices in places like bathrooms and locker rooms where children are expected to undress. I think they need to protect, she said, our children more, and I think more people need to be aware this happened. It could happen to anyone. Child predators could have that photo because of her. The school resource officer, which is another way of saying the school cop, is trying to figure out at this point in time whether the actions of the student who took the picture were criminal. Yeah, Arthur says, oh, sure, severely disciplined. They hit him with a crumpled newspaper. Bad student. Bad. Yeah. The Snodgrass family has no confidence that there will be anything resembling justice in this particular matter. Interestingly, there's nothing in there that said that photograph was taken by a trans person. Or no, there's not. It was probably just, you know, some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian's Christian daughter who happens to be snake mean. Ron in Raleigh asks the question, is it me, or are we becoming an increasingly hateful, insensitive, loutish country? No, I don't think it's just you, Ron. I think we are. I think in many ways we are desensitized. I think we have been encouraged toward that loutish behavior by a system, a polis, if you will, P-O-L-I-S, that values loutish behavior. And there's no sign it's going to be letting up. Jack in Shreveport, subject line Mecca Crane Info, says, just for kicks, I thought I'd try to find out what company built the crane. I was figuring China. Nope. The following is a quote from the article and links below. German crane company operated by the Bin Laden Families Consortium. Well, of course! The Saudi Bin Laden Group was founded by Osama Bin Laden's billionaire father, Mohammed, and the sprawling construction conglomerate runs a large amount of major building contracts in the Sunni kingdom. They're in charge of the expansion of the Grand Mosque. I told you, the goddess of irony is apparently vacationing in the desert. In regard to the University of Iowa story, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan says, gag, double gag, yuck. Is that a coherent enough response? Seriously, this is a logical result of cuts in funding higher education. Let's just leave it in the hands of the business sector. What could possibly go wrong? My hat's off to that faculty senate. On the whole, they have a spine. I'm just wondering how the new president will get back at them. Ooh, I think he's already working on it. Hey, yes, indeedy. Maybe something like, we have too much tenure here. Yeah, possibly. Yeah, where's the pull quote? I found this courtesy of Charlie Pierce over at the Esquire Politics blog. The guy in question is his name is Harold. Mr. Harold said during his news conference that he wanted first to reach out to those on the campus who don't think he's qualified for the top job. He said that teaching and research are where the big payoff is for the university. He also spoke of how senior faculty members spend their time and said that the university doesn't have enough senior professors who teach. He said he would talk with professors and the provost, P. Barry Butler, about topics like new learning models and balancing teaching and research. So, Diane, you probably have far more experience than I in prognosticating just exactly where that's going. You know, maybe, you take a tenured professor who's an expert in, I don't know, let's work with the English department, a tenured professor who has spent a career examining the use of the word doublet in Shakespeare and is the world's foremost authority on that, and teaches 700-level classes on it, and President Harold's going to lean on her and say, hey, you need to be down there teaching some business writing. Because teaching's at the heart of the university experience. Right? Yeah. See that coming a mile away. But like I said a minute ago, in regard to the Kansas story about young Miss Snodgrass, it's just ordinary garden variety, everyday, typical, all the time, red, white, and blue, mom and apple pie bullying in this country. Meanwhile, however, if we work our way back eastward to Ohio Stan, and the Ohio Stan that is sort of close-ish to West Virginia, because this story comes from WOWK-TV, which is out of Huntington, West Virginia. There's a lot of Ohio across the river from West Virginia that really resembles West Virginia a hell of a lot more than, say, you know, Akron or Columbus. Parents are outraged. In the area served by the Northwest Local School District. What are they outraged about? They're outraged because a boy who is transgendered is using the girls' bathroom at an elementary school. You know, an elementary school where puberty isn't even happening yet. Superintendent Todd Jenkins said, "Our job is to educate every child regardless of gender, and we want to make sure every child is safe." School Board President Keith Crabtree said, "When you address it as though it's the board or this district alone, that's not correct. I just want to correct that because this is a national thing. This is not our decision. We don't have the power to make a decision like that. See, what's at work here is something called Title IX of the Federal Education Amendments of 1972. A student's right to use the bathroom that corresponds with his or her gender identity is protected therein." But that doesn't sit well with the knuckle breathers and mouth walkers. You know, the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian parents there. Karen Jones said, "If you have a child who has a boy anatomy, let him go to the boy's restroom. If you have a child who has a girl's anatomy, let them go to the girl's restroom. It's simple." Of course, in this case, the only thing simple is Karen Jones. Patty Crabtree, who is not Keith Crabtree, the school board president, said of the rule,
"I despise it. We're Christians. We don't believe in this, all these different types of males and females. You know, what we have now. We've slowly watched all of our rights, our Christian rights, are being taken from us." We are tired of it.
Who goes potty where is Christian persecution now? One transgendered child going pee-pee has engendered an entire fracas among the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians. I mean, what, do they want to watch? Do they want potty police? How long ago was it that floor roller, strychnine swigger, tongue speaker from God knows where wanted to do panty checks over athletics? Where was it? The South Dakota, was it? There's just persecution everywhere if you're a Christian. I mean, mercy sakes. It's all around us. The rights of the Christians is just being trampled underfoot by the heathen transgendered 8-year-olds. Because, you know, what that little 8-year-old probably needs is a sound beating, maybe with a G.I. Joe or a Tonka trunk. Here, kid, play with a toy truck. Maybe you won't be such a sissy then. Right? Because Jesus. So I've run over a little bit. It's about 20 minutes past the hour. It's time to fire up the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable that is the Horn Molloy Skype chat room for Friday on the Front Porch. We will take a little break and come back. You're welcome to join in. If you can't, if for some reason or another you can't figure out the complexities of Skype, the stress line is here for you, 304-663-3333. 304-663-4676, 304-663-4676, and you can use that. But if you can manage Skype, jump right into the conversation. It's a dandy. Just send a contact request, if you never have before, on Skype to Sparky Dunk. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn.
Bulldozers and dirt, bulldozers and dirt. What's your mama got hidden up her shirt? I like to play and I like to work, but most of all I like bulldozers and dirt. I met your mama when I was 19. You couldn't have been any more than three. She caught me stealing all this color TV. She called the cops and they arrested me. She was the wildest thing.
Music from the Drive-By Truckers. The vocal, of course, by the inimitable Patterson Hood. Bulldozers and Dirt. 25 minutes past the hour, almost halfway through this Friday on the Front Porch edition of The Horn. And I've got the Horn Malloy Skype chat group fired up for Friday on the Front Porch. But a quick announcement first. An anonymous contributor has suggested the following. This anonymous contributor is going to cover the evening's fundraising goal, or $200 of it, and has said and has requested that everyone else who contributes this evening, whatever the amount, that their names be put in a hat by yours truly, which I will do insofar as I have pen, paper, and a hat. And at the end of the evening, everyone who has contributed will draw one name out, and that person will receive the Have a Show on Me movie poster. You guys never cease to both amaze and inspire me with the goodness that you show within the Horn Family Commune congregation. So anything from, you know, a dollar to another Have a Show on Me to 10 of them, whatever. Everybody who contributes this evening gets their name put in a hat, and one of you will be the lucky recipient of an original signed, if you wish. I'll drop you a note if I've got your email, and I probably do. Well, I will, because you will have contributed via PayPal. I'll ask you if you want it signed or unsigned or however it is you want it. And so that's a really, really, really neat thing you did, anonymous member of the Horn Family Commune congregation. Thank you very, very much. That's just kind and generous and decent. Let's run over to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and get Friday on the Front Porch fired up. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
That delay scares me every time. I know you have to switch your mic on, but it's still...
Well, I'll just push the button on the little microphone.
Well, but see, I always assume I've done something wrong. Because I'm always inclined to blame the producer, to wit, me.
First of all, I want to say Billable Rick is still billing.
And good he can't God, that poor stomach. Man.
He's got to make up 50 hours in the next 3 days or something, he said. I have to read it again.
Golly, said, Moses.
Too many hours for Billable Rick to bill today. 50 to go in 3-plus days. I'll be listening to the show, though.
Knowing that Billable Rick is listening, being the old DJ that I am, I have a suggestion. At this point in time, Rick, I think it's time for you to cue up the Allman Brothers, especially the live version from the Fillmore of Tied to the Whippin' Post. It kind of fits.
Sounds like it.
Good God.
I remember seeing the Allman Brothers live, one of the best concert I ever went to.
Where'd you see them, Sparky?
Sacramento War Memorial Auditorium.
Because I only ask because that Fillmore concert is legendary, especially the rendition of Tied to the Whippin' Post.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they did that. It was 1972, and I was the designated driver for a couple of people that were dropping acid.
Somehow, it's almost eponymous, I think I'm using the word correctly, although sometimes I just masturbate words into sentences to see how they go over. Concerts for that era, you know, it's always, you know, and then there were the guys who were doing acid. And that didn't seem to wreck America. And somehow or another, seeing the Allman Brothers live in 1972, I don't know, do you think the current generation of young people, and this is where I begin to sound cranky and curmudgeonly, you think they're going to get, by God, I remember when I saw Taylor Swift at the Meriwether Post Pavilion outside D.C. A couple of us were wasted on Red Bull, and it just doesn't, it's not the same thing, is it?
No.
Oh.
But I know one person's going to remember that Darlington 500.
Two.
Well, you too, but I mean, your Ferg, I think, was.
We've got the bug here.
Well, he ran about it on Facebook.
Oh, I didn't see that. Did he? I don't always see his posts. That's cool. He enjoyed it.
Yeah, and he posted the two videos he took, I guess.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. And we'll be watching on Sunday. Was it Richmond?
Yep. Saturday night.
Oh, Saturday night. And I started looking at the schedule, and I went, "Oh my God, Talladega, October 25th. Dear God." maybe if I save up a few more hotel points and a few more gas points, you know, it's 8 hours. Ooh wee!
But you got to buy the tickets this time. You ain't gonna have a benefactor.
Well, that's true. And I kind of went and priced those. It's not outrageous. It's not out of reach. Of course, I think the ultimate would be to do the whole weekend and do the Xfinity race the day before and the qualifying and all that fun stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, I don't know. Probably won't happen, but it sure would be fun. Well, let's check in with the other members of the Friday on the Front Porch group. Well, hey, good evening, Carol Baker.
What a surprise.
Yeah, indeed. Welcome aboard.
Yeah, I actually finally got out of work at a decent hour on a Friday.
Well, you know, that's why they pay you the big bucks, right?
I appear to be being paid in kittens.
Well, I noticed that. Somebody, they're tipping in kittens now, right?
Apparently. Now, I got to work at 5:45 this morning, which is bad enough. And we had a horrible storm come through here last night when the cold front came through. I mean, it went from 96 to 60 in, like, no time at all. And, apparently, this poor little urchin had weathered the storm, the worst of the storm, and it had just pretty much finished when I got to work this morning, and this poor little thing was soaking wet.
Oh, there's nothing more pathetic than a wet kitten.
Hugging my door, the front door to where I work, and she got scared when I came up, and I said, no, come back, and she was like, okay. So I opened the door and she came in and she was just terrified of everything. And within about 15 minutes, she was kind of calmed down and sitting on my lap. And
I knew the sitting on my lap part was on the way. Yeah.
I had a towel and dried her off and warmed her up a little bit. And finally, when the store opened at 8 o'clock, she was acting kind of frantic. And I thought, she's got to be hungry. So I ran up to the little grocery store at the corner and got her a little can of cat food, the really good stuff with like all naturals like salmon, and ate the entire thing.
Aww. And it has a happy ending because
it does.
You found her a human.
I found her a human. I couldn't just dump her back out just because it was Friday, you know, when I was going home for the weekend. I was planning on bringing her home, and the boss's son came in, the youngest one that's kind of always snotty to me. He's got two boys. The oldest one has the heart of his mother. The second one has the snark of his father. And he's always kind of a little smartass. And he came in and took one look at that kitten and just melted into a puddle and started playing with her. And he's like, how did you get anything? He saw that pile of work on my desk that was done. He goes, how did you get anything done all day? And I said, hey, I work for your father. I had to. So he was playing and playing with her. And finally he's like, well, are you going to keep her? And I said, I'd love to find her home, but I'm not going to dump her back out. And he got real quiet and he goes, I think she'd like it in my apartment. I was like shocked. And I was like, really?
Oh.
And he's like, I'd really like to have her. And he goes, but I don't have anything. And I said, let me make you a litter box. Let me give you some food.
Let Auntie Carol help.
Yes, yes, yes. I had a brand new box of cat litter in the back seat of my car for the Steve, who very rarely uses cat litter. So
yes,
no
cat, yes, cat yeah. Stevens, right.
The man goes outside. He shits in the yard like a real man. And so he's texted me 3 times tonight telling me what fun he's having with her. So I'm like, okay, it's all good.
So what, maybe, 8, 10, 12 weeks old, you think?
Oh, she could not be more than probably 12 weeks old. Beautiful. She's going to have long hair. She's a black cat with long hair. Big tufts coming out of her ears and a big fluffy tail and a white tuxedo in the front.
Oh, very nice. And so she'll get her shots and she'll be spayed or neutered.
I made him promise.
Good. Well, you have certainly earned your angel wings for the day, Carol.
I have. I can't wait to go say something mean about somebody now.
Well, would you care, since we're talking, and since it was, since you brought it to my attention in the first place, would you care to say something mean about the superintendent of the Tonganoxie School District?
Bitch should resign. Flat out. This is news? Yes, it's news. Here's the deal. If a boy had not even gone in, but just, like, stuck his phone into the girls' locker room and snapped that picture, I am telling you, this country would be losing its collective fucking mind.
Hell would have yawned open.
You ain't kidding. That he would have been arrested. He would have been labeled a sex offender for the rest of his life. Why is it different because a girl took it? And I went to the trouble, Bob, of calling the DA's office.
Did you get anything in the way of a meaningful response?
Yeah, they were like, "Ooh, we are well aware of this, and we are not done with this." I have a feeling criminal charges are going to be filed.
Or charges, if they were brought, which, if they were brought against an adult, would constitute criminal charges, but against a juvenile will be considered merely offenses.
A smack on the, exactly. You know, these just youthful indiscretions that cause other kids to fucking kill themselves.
Right, yeah. Youthful. Speaking of youthful indiscretions, I noticed another one of those earlier today. Completely separate topic. But Donald, T-Rump's daddy? Daddy T-Rump?
Oh,
did you run across that
Klan?
One? Yeah, he was in the Klan. And he's
Bob,
and he wasn't
Bob.
Just in, he wasn't just, yes.
You don't honestly think that that's going to turn off any of the stumps. That's not a flaw. That's a feature.
That's, yes, absolutely. Well, hell, he is an American just like us.
That's right.
And what I found interesting out of it is that he's not just in the Klan, and it's not like they were just, you know, having a rally down there and singing "Man of Constant Sorrow" or nothing. No, this was the Klan in Jamaica, Queens. Okay.
Yeah.
Just to sort of clear up any misconceptions for anybody who thinks that the Klan is a Southern or a Midwestern thing. No, this was the Klan in Jamaica, Queens. And not only was it the Klan in Jamaica, Queens, it was the Klan in Jamaica, Queens, not just having a meeting, but having a goddamn riot and attacking our heroic first responder police.
God bless America.
The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever.
As they used to say in Jamaica, Queens, God bless America.
Exactly there. So not only was T-Rump's daddy in the Klan, T-Rump's daddy was in the Klan and in a riot trying to hurt police people, and that's supposed to get people upset today. And what's more, and I never really knew the story of T-Rump and where the money came from, but I assumed that he didn't go out find it selling apples and pencils on the sidewalks of Gotham.
Does the word grubstake mean anything?
Well, I lost part of that. The word what?
Grubstake.
Well, exactly. And it's a hell of a grub, too, because there was a little real estate empire involved, and the federal government wound up entering into a wide, broad, sweeping consent decree with Daddy T-Rump insisting that he stop discriminating against people of color because he refused to rent to black folks. And even after that consent decree was entered, he continued in his racist ways. So I guess we can say that the turd falleth not far from the toilet. Jesus, I tell you.
I'm sure the blacks loved him. He had a great relationship.
He has a great relationship with the blacks, but of course he's got blacks counting his money now, and he hates that because he doesn't want nobody counting his money except little Jews with the beanies on.
That what ain't you wearing the yarmulkes?
Right, yeah, those.
What an asshead. Oh. But I want you to go ahead and, I don't want to dominate here, go please say hello to everyone else and then come back because I have a terrorism story for out of Kansas City that I want to share with you.
Not terrorism!
Terrorism.
Well, by all means, let's do say some extended howdies. Good evening, Gerald.
Good evening.
How in the world are you?
I am alive.
And, well, are you you're alive. Does that mean you're still making that unfairly high wage?
Of course.
Nice.
You know, what's a thug to do, right? You know?
Exactly. I mean,
that's all right. That's all right.
and for those who aren't familiar, we've mentioned that on a number of occasions, but that's an inside West Virginia joke here. The presumptive Republican nominee for governor says that if you're making more than a dollar a day, you're making an unfairly high wage.
Well, I guess now they want to do away with the minimum wage.
Well, of course they do, because that's communism. That's
the new thing for next session.
Well, did you happen to see Gerald, what's her name, Sarah Blair?
Oh, God.
Our member of the House of Delegating, our 18-year-old member of the House of Delegating, whose daddy, the state senator, got her a seat in the House. She was speaking to some Rotarians, or pretty sure it wasn't Unitarians. Or, you know, some bunch of right-wingers or whatever, and said, and I just want to remind y'all that right to work is not anti-union.
Then what is it?
It's marka. It's freedom.
Right. Right. As if she would be an expert on that. Yeah, how many jobs has she had?
I'm sure she sold Girl Scout cookies.
She went right from high school to WVU, then her daddy bought her seat for her.
Yeah, but somewhere, no, I'm sure they had the help sell her Girl Scout cookies. I mean, that's how it works around here in almost level West by Cold Virginia, Stan. Not sure about out there in your terrorist-infested Kansas City, Carol, but round here, Mama and Daddy take the Girl Scout cookie order sheets, especially if they got a little stroke down to the office, and they go cubicle to cubicle. And say, now you want you some thin mints, don't you?
Especially if they work for the state.
Bingo.
Yeah. Thanks, Obama. Damn Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, indeed. So now, as we begin to watch summer fade away, have you had a good summer, Gerald? It's been a while since we talked.
Well, yeah, you know, it's been pretty good. I had big plans for the last long weekend over the Labor Day weekend, and cut this. I guess it was a sinus infection or something, and just clear took me out for the weekend. So, and it was a wonderful weekend here in almost level West by God, Virginia, Stan. As you well, no, you wouldn't know. You weren't here. Anyway, it was perfect weather for an outing, and I'm still a little congested from it, but I'm doing better. Went to work every day and made that unfairly high wage.
So you had a miraculous healing?
Well, it kind of hit me Friday evening last week, and I pretty much was homebound until I started feeling better Sunday, and then Monday I was a little better. You know, hell, you go to work when you feel bad, right? Take off when you feel good. But anyway, but it's kind of been, I haven't really done a whole lot this summer. Just kind of been busy at work, making all that unfairly high wage.
Yeah, I was going to say, damn glad to be.
Yeah, I am. I've got a good job. I'm not going to lie about it. And I'm grateful for it. But, it's not like you're led to believe. You know, it's not an unskilled position. It's taken me years and years and years to get where I am, along with a lot of other trades. I mean, it's not. I just don't understand why the right is so hung up on, it's so against labor. And I'm not just talking about union labor. I'm talking about labor in general. Because when the unions take a hit, everybody takes a hit. Whether you know it or not, your wages are indirectly determined by a union somewhere. And, well, I guess that's probably why, isn't it? I pretty much answered my own question, didn't I?
Well, but I think it's very real.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Excuse my language. Why the fuck do they care? I mean, really?
Well, because if you're making a decent wage, that means, you know, that's a $1.97 that some billionaire doesn't have.
Yeah, but if I'm making a decent wage, I can go down to Bill Cole Motors and buy a new Honda or whatever the hell it is he sells. I think he sells a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I know he sells him some Nissans. I know that.
Yeah, he's got a Chevrolet dealership too, I think, down there in Bluefield. But see, that's what I don't understand. They don't want anyone making a decent living wage. Who the hell do they think are going to buy the consumer products that their corporations sell? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, that's because they rely on things like miracles. I mean, these aren't the most rational or logical people in the world.
Praise Jesus. Like that?
Yeah, exactly. On easy terms.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, Ron. No Teslas here in West Virginia, that's for sure.
Yeah, by God. Because we're Merkins. Speaking of Ron, you got about what? About 12 feet on the snow? 12 feet of snow on the ground now, Ron?
No, Bob, Mr. Tilemaster, I do not have any snow on the ground. Now I had a day. It was about 80 degrees. Just heading into a rainy weekend. So I took the afternoon off and went out to a golf course and made myself smile for about 15 out of 18 holes. So hardly swore at all.
Scratching the card, were you?
I was. I mean, I was putting down birdies, son.
Dang.
Yeah.
None of those patented Kincaid six putts?
I didn't have a three putt all day. It was one of those miraculous moments. And honest, I swear, several times walking down the course, I went, praise Jesus. And, of course, I'm playing by myself, so I can do this without offending any other folks. But it was one of those occasional rounds that make you smile, and I'm perfectly willing to accept it. Next time I go out, I couldn't hit my ass with a banjo. But that's just the way golf is.
What a terrible, another thing I would not use a banjo for, right after making music. But so you got it. So
you're treading on real thin ice there.
Well, I mean, you know the difference between an onion and a banjo. No one ever cried when they cut up a banjo.
Do you hear one about the banjo player pulled into a truck stop, had his banjo in the back seat, came back out, his rear window was broken. He knew somebody had stolen his prize Gibson banjo. Looked in the back seat, and now he had two banjos.
Exactly. The first time I heard that one, it was accordions. So
I have to say I own a 1969 Gibson Master Tone 5-string banjo.
Whoa.
Worth a phenomenal amount of money at the moment. And my talented daughter, living in San Francisco, has that along with an authentic dobro and some other stuff that she's acquired. Plays it on stage.
Wow.
And I've had people ask me to borrow that banjo for recording sessions.
Whoa.
And I've let them do it on the premise that I get a free CD.
You're not holding out for credit?
No.
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 Banjo, but, banjo courtesy of Ron's Frozen Banjos?
No.
So I got to ask you, I was on Facebook, and I saw this photograph of you in a tux.
Yes, sir.
And your sister, your lovely sister on the other end.
My lovely and talented sister.
Lovely and talented and stunningly artistic sister on the other end. Okay, so what's the backstory?
That was my younger sister's half-sister's wedding somewhere back in the days of steam and sail. I would say 25 years ago. And
well, you haven't changed a damn lick. I thought it was day before yesterday.
I'm slightly larger pant size. Back then, I think it was a 30.
Ran around in the shower to get wet. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I'm not. But now that was. I've got two sisters living in Ohio, one of whom is decidedly. No, we won't go there. No. Somebody might be listening. So I have two wonderful half-sisters living in Ohio. And so,
got it.
And that's as far as I'm going on that story. But I do think it back then I looked semi-decent in a tux.
Oh, you were styling.
Yeah, for back then, I mean, I had those nice, wide 1980s glasses on, and yep, and Kelly looked really good, still looks good. I've changed, Kelly hasn't. So, speaking of West Virginia and Kelly, I have to point out I have been successful in orchestrating my relationship with folks in the sandbox.
Yes.
And I don't have to be in the sandbox until I fly out of Canada on the 4th of October.
Wow.
Which means I'm going to be attending, believe it or not, folks, sit back. Those of you who've seen my photos are going to just fall back in stunned amazement. I'm going to be attending my 50th high school reunion.
Holy mackerel.
5-0. And that's taking place the last weekend in September. I'm going to be there. So, and you know what that means, Bob.
Wowzer, wait a minute. I'm looking for the calendar now because, damn it, I'm traveling toward the end of September, and I hope this doesn't go sideways on us. No, it will not go sideways on us. I hope.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm going to be bolting for Atlanta on like Monday the 28th.
Well, I'll probably come down from Erie through Pittsburgh, and I'll throw something out the window on my way down the interstate to 64.
Is that going to be that voice I hear yelling, "Go long"?
No, it's going to be that old baseball coach voice of mine yelling, "Soft hands, damn it."
Well, I can report.
I used to coach Little League baseball. I was a tier two Little League coach for all the nose pickers. And the kids would show up, start of every season with this stiff as a board glove that they'd paid an inordinate amount of money for. And I would take the gloves away from the kids. Hardly ever made them cry. And I had made up 6-inch by 9-inch pieces of 1/4-inch plywood with Velcro straps on the back to fit over their hands. And I would make them learn how to catch fly balls using a piece of plywood. Well, first
I don't
time
think
I
you
tried
could do that anymore, Ron.
Yes, you can. They're still being used by a few coaches around Ottawa. A few other coaches picked up on it because my kids got to be known as the kids who never had a ball hit their glove and pop out. Soft hands. You have, if you're catching a ball with a baseball with a piece of wood in your hand, you got to catch it, trap it in the other hand, and sort of give. And the little kids were easy to teach. They could learn this really quick, and they loved it.
My career teaching baseball and softball fundamentals kind of came to a screeching halt, at least with the female side of our progeny. I will never forget the evening. Our eldest was playing softball, and so we were just going through some very. I didn't know about the plywood thing, I admit, but I had gotten her a glove. And unlike all the other parents who use the saddle soap and all of that stuff, and it never works, when I was a little kid and I had a new glove, and I've still got the damn glove, my father brought home from the plant a little container of something called neat's foot oil. And we used that, and that's what he grew up treating, I don't know what, it's some sort of industrial lubricant, I guess. But that's what I grew up, he grew up treating baseball gloves with it, and that's what I learned. And just turns them into butter almost overnight. And so we treated her glove and everything, and we were, you know, learning about getting the ball, getting the glove down on the ground for the, you know, for the grounders. And you know, I'm not hitting any blazing, you know, grounders at her or anything. Just, you know, little kid. You know, maybe about 9, 10. And so we had worked our way to pop-ups. And again, nothing towering, nothing that's going to come down at horrifying velocities. But, you know, you teach the two-handed method, right? I mean, because we're not in the big leagues yet, and we can't just cavalierly flick our gloves up and catch the fly ball and you know, sort of lob it back into the, no, fundamentals are everything, right? So,
right.
I show her proper technique and she keeps on turning it around, with her palm sort of facing her and holding it at face level. And I keep saying, baby, this is not going to end well. And turning it back around and then she'd fall back into, and eventually the ball hits the palm of her glove and bounces straight into her nose and her mouth, which then erupt in a sort of geyser of blood. Because, you know, that area bleeds easily. You're supposed to agree here, Ron. I'm not a mean guy.
I'm nodding. No, you're a pussycat.
And so immediately, baby turns around and goes running into the house, Mommy, Mommy, Mommy. And hell hath no fury like an Agnes. Oh no! What have you done to our child? Well, nothing. And that was a tough and tense little interval there for a little bit, but she got over it and she toughened up and we learned that there's no crying in softball. And oh God.
Well, I gave up coaching shortly after I was chastised for stepping outside of the dugout and grabbing a smoke between innings. That was a long time ago. And but, you know, we were pristine and pure up here even then. And the second incident that made me stop coaching was when my son was catcher, and he'd worked out a routine with another kid who played left field. And they waited until we had a guy on third base. And he's leading off, leading off, leading off. And my son, catcher, decides to, he steps back from the plate and he makes a throw to third base. But it's in, it's outside the foul line and it's way over the third baseman's head. And the left fielder has to run over and catch it. Well, the runner sees this and the coach sees this on third base and he goes racing towards home. At which point my son calmly steps up with the baseball in his hand and tags him. Because he'd stepped back and thrown a potato.
Oh.
Oh. So, the umpire, lady, president of the Little League Association, and she immediately declared the runner safe, and my son protested, and she immediately said he's safe because you introduced a foreign object onto the field. Well, no, ma'am, I didn't. I was 6 feet outside of the foul line. The ball never crossed the foul line, and the left fielder caught it outside of the foul line. The runner should have been paying attention. Well, then she declared the runner safe and called him for a delay of game and kicked him out of the game.
Did you go kick dirt on her shoes?
No, because right after that meeting, we wandered over to the community center where we had the annual meeting of the Little League Association.
Here, God, all those coaches, hell.
Yes. And I had to walk in, and first thing I said was, I raised my hands, I went, mea culpa, mea culpa. I knew nothing about it, but I don't care who you are, that was funny. And I wasn't
That's delightful.
I wasn't invited back to coach next year. But that was the last year any of my kids wanted to play, but it all worked out well. I haven't thought of that story in years. You bring this out in me, Bob.
Well, I mean, I'm a trained professional, so.
It's like I've gone to an Alzheimer's clinic, and they're doing this deep memory thing, and it's working. Thank you, sir.
You're more than
welcome. You're a miracle worker.
Glory. Hallelujah.
Anyway, it got to be other people on the call.
Well, there are, and we're going to get around to everybody. Little note, so far, the names in the hat this evening, and I'm going to have to be careful writing them down, are Carl and Carol. In classic Carl fashion, he has reduced the deficit by $9.11 to $50.65. See, 9/11. I saw what you did there, Carl. So I have to be careful to draw the O in Carol very, very broadly. So there are two names in the hat. However, between now and 9 p.m., all names of anybody who contributes this evening go into the hat, and one of you gets a Last Mountain poster courtesy of an anonymous and kind-hearted contributor who wants somebody to have one, who might not otherwise be able to kick $200 into the kitty. So I think that's really cool. It doesn't matter. Everybody who contributes between now and 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time goes into that pot, and that's about 55 minutes and 40 seconds from now. Let's see. Let's go around and hey, we've got Jack this evening. Hey, good evening, Jack, down in Shreveport.
Hi, Bob.
How are you?
Not too bad. Let's see. Weather down here is kind of got hot again after a couple of days of cool breeze.
For down there, we use the word sultry, don't we?
There you go. And let's see, it's getting darker earlier. I really noticed that. When's the time change? At end of October or Halloween?
It's after Halloween. It's November.
Thanks. But maybe it's by Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, thanks, Obama.
Yeah.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah. You're a little slow. You haven't been doing this in a while, Gerald.
Well, I'm doing something very important.
Oh, okay. Well, it is. No, but go ahead, Jack.
I was getting into your conversation with Angry Indian last night,
And I didn't catch the last 10 minutes or 5 minutes, but y'all were really going. I don't know what subject y'all want to go on, but I saw a letter to the editor concerning BLM. I don't know if we want to get into that, but I can if you want.
Well, I was going to offer a quick update.
Okay.
Because one of the things that Angry and I talked about last night were these right wing halfway to halfway to Nazi oath keepers.
Yeah.
Truly, they are oafs. Angry just sent me a story a little bit ago to the effect that Sister Clerk Kim Davis has declined their protection.
She doesn't want to make more of a mess of what she's already got.
Well, I think she'd rather not be around gunplay when it comes right down to it. She's got enough of it with her God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, gun-toting Christian husband.
Right. Yeah. Let's see. What was... Yeah, well, there's one of those Kim Davis letters in the same paper, but it's kind of on the left, so that's all right. On the BLM, this reader or writer says, I've read about, paraphrase, I've read about BLM, and I agree that all lives matter. But let's see, if someone says black lives matter, then how can you support killing blacks? And starting the hairs going up on my neck, and then let's see, blah blah blah, abortion. And there we are,
right? Because that's never far away from and abortion's the ones that are killing the blacks peoples,
right? Yeah, because let's see, if he says, if you, or how can you support killing blacks? Well, that's the whole idea, so they don't get, people are tired of getting shot and dying. And abortion is the same as getting shot by police or something like that, Anyway, there's always got to be some kind of religious thing in there. But anyway, that's enough of that.
Well, that seems to be their persistent and forever kind of argument. There's a niece of Dr. King who's, her name's Velveeta King or the Albigensian King or something like that. She's a real Lulu idiot who's out there constantly hooting about the precious little fetuses. But meanwhile, because of course everything, if a right winger gets a cold cup of coffee, they're being persecuted. We've got a news story out there. You got some good God fearing, upstanding, Bible believing, Christ centered Christians up in Massachusetts. That's how you have to pronounce it down Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi way, Massachusetts. And they're getting persecuted because they want to adopt some foster children, but they want to be able to beat the tar out of them when they break the rules. And them godless commie liberals up in Massachusetts don't allow foster kid beating. Melanie Magazoo says, it's been hard because being a foster parent is something that's been in my heart that I've wanted to do for a long time. And her husband Gregory said,
adopting a pet is harder than, trying to get away with what they want to get away with.
And Melanie Magazoo tried to explain that they're only going to beat them in a Christian way because she said, we don't even spank our kids if we are angry, so there's no anger involved. These kids are coming from homes where there's a lot of anger. The Hebrew and Christian scriptures tell us whoever spares the rod hates his son, but whoever loves him is diligent to discipline him. That was their lawyer. Another one of those lawyers. The Department of Children and Families is saying that Christians and Jews need not apply. The paranoia persecution complex knows no ends with these weirdo fundamentalist evangelicals.
Yep, that's right. Well, I guess that's all I got for this round.
Okie dokie. Well, I see Timmy is in the room. Good evening, Tim. Huh.
God, religion is so hard.
Yeah, isn't it?
Hey, you know what season it is? You, of all people, should know what season it is.
Oh, yeah, it's golly season.
That's right.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that until I was cruising Facebook.
Oh, yeah, we've had some pretty busy weekends around here. Apparently the golly is right dandy this year.
I would say it is. About the chaos that ensues down there, Bob.
I'm sorry.
Hey, it works now.
Hey, there we are.
I just thought you might tell us about the chaos that ensues during golly season.
Oh, it can be zany. I mean, it gets tough to get a seat in a restaurant. Golly season is the part of the whitewater rafting season that is the absolute busiest because the hardcore whitewater people absolutely love it when they let the water out of Summersville Dam. And bear in mind, I mean, because coal keeps the lights on. That water coming out of Summersville Dam doesn't even generate any electricity or anything, does it?
Yeah, it does.
Does it? They got a hydro station there?
Yeah. I had some of the guys out of the local worked up there.
I'll be different.
It's not a very big one, but...
Well, a little... Well,
yeah, they retrofitted that thing.
Yeah, I mean, they don't want it to be big enough to be big enough to draw the attention of the coal industry because, they might be offended.
Why would we use the largest lake in the state to generate electricity, Bob? I mean, shit, come on.
Yeah, well, communism.
Yeah, right. And, you know...
And that's not real stuff. Electricity. Now, wait a minute. We're not talking about the retrofit down at down below Golly Bridge, are we?
No, it's on the discharge there at the dam.
Well, hallelujah.
Yeah, it's been there for a while, but I don't know how much it generates. I can't imagine it's very big because coal keeps the lights on and stuff.
For Jesus. Right.
Freedom, all that good. Thanks, Obama.
I've been living my whole life with hydroelectric power.
Well, that's probably why...
Your damn commie electricity.
That's probably why you don't love America, Sparky. You don't have no coal.
Yeah.
But I love that big old dam up there.
Then we must be really communists, then, because we have... Besides hydro, we have wind, and we have solar... We're getting rid of the coal and the power plants and the gas.
We never had coal fire plants up here.
I don't know why we
had cogeneration plants. Burn the products from the lumber industry.
And burn trash from LAX.
Well, see, but you only think you have electricity, Tim. You don't have real electricity in L.A. because you don't have coal-fired electricity.
That's right.
Oh, well.
I mean, one of these days, if climate change is real, you're probably going to freeze to death in the dark because you ain't got no coal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Obama's right. EPA is killing the coal jobs, too.
Oh, I got to ask you, Gerald, did you get the – are you in Evan Jenkins' district? No, you're in
no.
Oh, damn it.
I'm in Arch's daughters.
I got the awesomest mailer from him the other day, Congress Critter Evan Jenkins, telling about his coal assistance program. Because he's a hardworking representative of the people looking out for the best interests of the coal miner. Now, granted, the Obama administration has this thing called Power Plus out there that provides actual relief for unemployed and displaced workers from the coal industry, including things like money.
A lot of money.
Yeah, a whole lot of money. But Evan Jenkins can't be bothered to tell the Rubes about that. He's got his own thing called the Coal Assistance Program that will tell miners how to file for Social Security Disability.
Right.
How do you get Social Security Disability if you're not disabled?
Well, black lung and all that stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but here's the fun part. So it arrived in the mail, and it's got this postcard attached to it that you have to put your own damn stamp on and send back to tell him what issues matter to you, and then they'll turn around, of course, and start mailing you mailing you solicitations for donations. But the return on the return address there, and there's nothing even vaguely useful to a constituent in this thing, because the program itself is just, well, it's a bullshit bucket of nothing. But above the mailing address, or above the return address on this thing, it says, "This mailing was prepared, published, and mailed at taxpayer expense."
Of course it is.
The Coal Miner Assistance Program. Each and every day I'm fighting for our hard-working coal miners and their families. Tragically, however, the war on coal has been devastating to our state. My Coal Miner's Assistance Program is a resource to help you find new employment, apply for the state and federal benefits you need and deserve, and learn more about black lung benefits and Social Security. Coal mining is a proud tradition in our state, and I am honored to stand up for West Virginia Energy and West Virginia Jobs as your member of Congress. Please use your own goddamn stamp.
Praise
Jeebus.
White Republican Jesus.
Amen.
Sounds like externalizing costs again.
Well, of course. Absolutely. Oh, by the way, and I can now announce we have four names in the hat. Carol, Carl, Gerald, and Ron. So you've each got a 25% chance on the drawing. Those percentages.
I think I've got an edge.
Well, I mean, considering you win the goddamn Hitler pool every night. Oh, damn it!
Yep.
818.
Yeah, Gerald had it. I was looking right here. Son of a gun. I want to go to Vegas with you.
Cheaters prosper.
Hey, put it on there anyway. I mean, I posted on there. I said 518, so.
I want to hear about the terrorism in.
Oh yeah, I do. Let me check in with Roger real quick and Jay Cruz, and then we'll get back to the tourism. Hey Roger, I saw you go away and then come back. Welcome back.
Well, I'm not sure I'm really in.
You are.
You're in.
Okay. My I don't know. My computer's about 15 years old. I think I need a new one. Has everybody been able to see the Facebook stuff posting from the Heirloom Expo down in Santa Rosa?
Oh, I mean, yeah, we've had our moments of food porn here on the Horn, Roger, but I was going to tell you, that really is food porn. That giant pyramid of squash, oh my God.
Well, it was about 20 feet tall.
Wow. And the really cool old squashes are beautiful.
Well, the thing that blew me away was, I mean, I went down there and I sat there and I talked to people about it, and a lot of people thought I had 850-year-old seeds and I had disabuse them. That no, these are 4 to 6 generations away. But I ended up getting a first place. I went out and wandered around the vendors and all the rest of that stuff. And I came back, and all of a sudden there was this blue ribbon hanging on the sign. If anybody lives anywhere close to Santa Rosa, it's over because it ended yesterday. But if anybody lives anywhere close to Santa Rosa, they really need to go there next year. It'll be about the same time kind of stuff. I have no whatever contact or whatever. I have no knowledge, but it will come on again. And it is amazing. I mean, they got pigs, they got chickens, they got goats, they've got the squash, they've got the watermelon. There were probably 300 to 400 different varieties of tomatoes. And one of the people there that was, that had the best tasting tomato prize of the participants coming in was selling seeds. And I bought some seeds to give my friend in Willow Creek who grows tomatoes because I can't because I'm not hot enough here. The pumpkin that won the giant pumpkin was 1,725 pounds pumpkin. And all kinds of different vendors and solar energy stuff. And, I bought salt from that's been evaporated down in the Baja California, to make my sauerkraut with instead of Morton's, kosher salt. Fantastic stuff. But God damn it, it was hot. I mean, I'm poor, coastal boy up here where a hot day is like 72 75.
Yeah, 72 again today, no relief in sight, heat wave continues.
Yeah. And down there in Santa Rosa it was like 105 106, maybe, I don't know.
104 here today.
Yeah, well, you were about 106 the other day.
Yeah, we were 108 yesterday.
Yeah, well,
summer just don't fade away here. It hangs on.
To me, a hot day is 72.
You know, I think if you don't mind, Roger, and this is, I'm just thinking off the top of my head here. I think it would be kind of cool if we could offer a little seed packet from the squash to the horn gardeners out there.
Well, I'm not opposed to that whatsoever. I picked four squash, took them down there. I donated one to a Native American lady that came to talk to me. The seed that I've harvested so far is not yet viable because it wasn't mature enough. And I'm selling off. I'm going to cut them, but nobody's going to get any seed. And I don't know. I've probably got another 40 squash out in the garden that I haven't picked yet.
Good God.
But normally when you harvest squash, you wait for the stem end to dry up. And they weren't dry at all. I had to take a saw out and cut the ends. So it will be slightly down the road. But I would be very happy to make up packets of, you know, 8-10 seeds. Send them to you, and you can, quote, sell them, unquote, for donations to your program.
Yeah, I wouldn't even necessarily thinking along those lines, but I just, you know, I think it'd be neat if we could.
If you want to donate $10 or $20 to the horn, you, as a reward, you'll get a little packet of seeds. I'm not talking sell. I'm talking
right. A premium.
Premium. But it's going to be another 2 to 3 months before they mature enough, because the one I picked and ate and dried the seeds and did a germination test that none of them worked, and tomorrow I'm going to be cutting them open and selling chunks at farmer's market, and I'll look at the seeds again. But I have a feeling that the seeds need another month or so on the plant, in the ground, you know, blah blah blah, before the seeds become mature enough to be viable. And I can pass them on. Anyhow, if people want to look at this kind of stuff, the Heirloom Expo is the website you want to go to. Facebook. Yeah, it's both a website and Facebook, but the Heirloom Expo. And Bob, I mean, there were like 300 different varieties of heirloom tomatoes on display.
Oh,
amazing. I mean, there was a whole table of cantaloupes, a whole table of cucumbers, a whole table of corn. And when I say a table, I'm not talking a dining room table. I'm talking about 20, 30 feet of table.
Oh, that's cool.
All this different stuff. The biggest squash that was there was, I think, 1,725 pounds as the giant squash that won. And I know Monterey's got bigger ones, but I mean, a 1,725-pound pumpkin is one hell of a pumpkin.
No, no kidding. That's a beast.
And
it's a lot of pie.
It was just, yeah. It was a really great thing. This is the first time I've ever been there, and I loved it. And if anybody can get down to Santa Rosa next year, early September, mid-September, to go to this festival, it is fantastic. And I really screwed up. This guy comes up to me and says, well, I want to take a picture with you and your squash. I'm like, okay, fine, I'll do that. Turns out he's the owner of the company, and I didn't even process it. And I was pleasant and all the rest of that, and there's a picture of me with him. But the owner of the company that's a worldwide company walks up to me and says, well, come over, hold your squash, let me take a picture. And I just treated him like everybody else, just, somebody that wanted to take a picture of me. Okay, fine, I'll do it. And then I realized I just kind of dissed the guy that put this whole thing on. Kind of embarrassed.
I think you're going to be okay. So I'm absolutely sitting here quivering with anticipation. I want to know about this Kansas City terrorism story.
Well, they have a fundraiser here in Kansas City every year. It's called the Kansas City StairClimb.com. And what it is to honor the firefighters who braved the Twin Towers. It's like they raise funds. You get like sponsors to sponsor you, and you go up and down these stairs to see if you can do as many flights of stairs as they had to do that day trying to save people. And some stump decided it would be a really good idea. 20-year-old Florida guy got on the internet and was talking to some undercover FBI agents, trying to get them to go there to detonate a bomb at this event. And no, Tim, I was not the informant, but I like your style. But
he contacted an informant. It was an informant to the FBI.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you said I was the informant, and I was like, no.
Given half a chance, anyway, you would have been, though. I mean, what a jerk.
And it's like, I don't understand this fascination that these young guys have with ISIS, and because supposedly he was some sort of a sympathizer who's trying to get all these people to do this. And I'm like, of all the places, Kansas City, really? And of all the events, the memorial stair climb?
I'm sitting here looking at a picture of Goob.
And you see, all that money goes. We've had a lot of, there have been a couple of events here in the greater Kansas City area where arson fires were like really huge and firefighters were killed. And they take it pretty seriously. And all this money goes to the Firefighters Memorial Fund to help the widows and the children of fallen firefighters, which I think is an extraordinarily noble thing.
Yeah.
Given how many of them have died at the hands of other minor terrorists. But, yeah, I mean, that just kind of blew me away a little bit. That was all the news across Kansas City yesterday, was that they had gotten this guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, if I understand correctly, he's a kid from Florida who was pretending to be a Lebanese guy who had emigrated to Australia, who became therein enamored of ISIS, and then said he was...
What?
Yeah. Totally believable. Nailed it.
But I, you know, I don't... But let's remember, you know, I'm like you, Carol. I don't get that guy, but I also don't get the number of, you know, young whippersnappers, get off my lawn, who listen to Alex Jones.
Alex Jones.
I don't know any young people who listen to Alex Jones.
Oh, I do. Oh, I so do, and they plaster the stop signs around here with bumper stickers that say Infowars.com and fluoride is death that they bought from Infowars.com.
Oh.
But by the way, Alex Jones has problems of his own now because he invited
other than the obvious.
Well, yes, because he invited David Duke to debate him for 2 hours.
Oh, God.
And I saw this story today courtesy of my my old buddy Dave Nyward, who does some writing for the SPLC. And so so Alex Jones has David Duke on, and for a while it's Old Home Week and they're all agreeing about the New World Order, and then David Duke starts on, and the Jews are trying, the Jews, you know, the usual Klan shtick. I guess Alex Jones said, well, maybe the Jews aren't quite so bad. And now there's this whole, the man who invented conspiracy theories for the modern age now has one of his own. And it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Because the right wing is all pissed off because he took down the interview of him kind of, you know, not winning the argument. Okay, this is not me saying David Duke was right. It's me saying David Duke is better at this than Alex Jones is. And so consequently, they pulled the interview off the Alex Jones website and the YouTube channel, which immediately made all the paranoid, you know, Henry Gibson Klansman type. Remember Henry Gibson as the neo-Nazi in the Blues Brothers movies? Yeah, they're all paranoid now, saying obviously Alex Jones is a Jew shill. You know, he's got a Jew ex-wife. And what's that German word we like so well?
Schadenfreude?
I thought it was Hassenpfeffer, but yeah, Schadenfreude. It's just a delicious case of it. You can find the story. Let me check here real quick, because it's hilariously good reading.
If it weren't for Schadenfreude, I'd have no Freud at all.
Exactly. It's over at the Hate Watch blog.
I'm going there.
Radio hosts debate with notorious white supremacist and subsequent attempts to cover tracks results in accusations by fans that he's... Wait a minute, you guys can't hear the reverb, but everybody else can. Controlled by Jews! Ay, ay, ay. Not kidding. But no, it's fun reading. And Dave Nyward is an excellent writer. Oh, hey, I noticed, wow, more folks popping by. Jay Cruzen's in the room. Hey, Jay Cruzen. I think.
Hey, Bob.
There he is.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, and no, by God, the Hardee's gravy is not better than McDonald's. Sorry, I just had to get that off my chest.
Well, you know what? You can't even get the freaking sausage gravy at the McDonald's down here. They don't sell it.
Oh, so you go to, Hardee's by default. I understand.
There is no Hardee's down here either. Only when I go to North Carolina.
You know what? If you go to North Carolina to eat if you go to North Carolina to eat Hardee's gravy, you got bigger problems than I can even address.
No, I just get it when I'm there. But if I want good sausage gravy, I go to the Plantation Diner down here. It's just nice little home cooking. You can get a damn good breakfast.
Yum, yum.
Yeah, it's old Southern style too. I don't know where these people come from. They can't be Florida natives. Anyway.
So what's going on in Jay Cruzen world?
Well, I only had to put in 13 hours of work today. Yay!
Oh, short arming it, huh?
Yeah, hell yeah. Released 3 hours early. You know, I have already put in, I think, 1,200 hours this year overtime. And that's more than I did all of last year.
You need to give some pointers.
In the ninth month.
You need to give some pointers to Billable Rick.
Yeah, all right. Most of mine isn't by choice. No, all kidding aside, the weather has been just nuts down here this summer. It's every day for the past two and a half months, we've had these afternoon storms that just rip havoc. And the days that we don't have them, they're so scared of them that they keep us here. They keep us in working anyway. You know? They won't let you go home. They say, no, you got to be here just in case. So, that's my world.
Will it get a little better when hurricane season ends?
No, I mean, we haven't had no tropical moisture whatsoever other than that, whatever that female hurricane name was, Erica. And we didn't get much. We only had, like, and, no, it has nothing to do with hurricanes.
Mm-hmm. The hurricanes are over here.
Did anybody see the video that the weather happened today in Saudi Arabia when the crane fell?
Oh, the lightning storm?
Yeah, the wind and the rain.
Wait, stop it. What, it rained in Mecca?
Yeah.
Does it do that? I mean in a non-climate change world, does it do that?
I saw it on the video on BreakingNews.com, and the wind was blowing, and it was blowing stuff around. I mean, like roofing material, and the streets were flooded, and it was blowing hard when that lightning hit.
Oh, one more thing to add. Speaking of lightning, August 26th this year, Florida broke a record. We had 22,000 lightning strikes on August the 26th.
No climate change.
Huh?
There's no such thing as climate change.
No, it just gets worse every... The weather just gets worse every year, Sparky. That's all it is.
Well, we're waiting. Everybody it's keeps telling us to, right? El Nino's going to clobber us.
I can't wait until some... Well, I can, because it'll be awful all the way around. But I do have this little mental image of some right-wing, godforsaken governor of Florida standing with the water coming up over his mouth going, there is no such thing as climate change.
Boy, you do that so well.
I'm a trained professional. Yeah, the Dune reference for the evening. Marty pointing out, rain in Arrakis. Exactly. That must mean the Kwisatz Haderach is on the ground. God. Let's check in with the Angry Indian. Angry has joined the Friday night conversation. Are you there, Angry?
Yeah, what's up?
What's happening, man?
Who was it? Was it Carol Baker who was talking about, you know, why is it that, you know, these young men and a lot of women, which you have to ask, really, you have to ask why.
Yeah, okay.
Are, you know, going out of their way to join ISIS. Well, people were asking the same question here in the States during, when I was a kid during the 70s, why, you know, these working class kids were joining the Hell's Angels or trying to join the Pagans, which was in Philly with me.
Is
right?
it? I mean, is it? I mean, is that really? I mean, is that the same thing? Angry?
Well, no. There's elements of it. It's not. This is exactly the same thing. It's not a mirror, but there's elements of it. You're talking about people for the most part. When you really look at their jacket, they have never really been completely assimilated or accepted where they either immigrated or where their parents immigrated in which they were born. Remember the Woolwich attack a few years ago?
Yeah.
All right. Those two were black Brits, African Brits. At least one of them was Nigerian. And he was Muslim. And both his parents worked for the British government. His parents were conservative. But here it was. He's British, doesn't know anything else but bangers and mash. He tries to hook up with his African origins a little bit. MI6 grabs him, turns him over to two other governments in Africa where they torture him. You know, this happened to him twice, which doesn't excuse what he did. But it's to point out with a lot of these young kids, no matter what it is that they seem to try, in England, France, the racism is so goddamn bad. The neo-Nazis are burning down the immigrant centers, the immigrant housing in Germany, the immigrant housing in France. Not just because of what's happened with the Syrians. This has been going on.
Oh yeah,
they're scared.
Well, I mean, they're Nazis. You know, hating people is what they do. The reporter, the woman in Hungary, a reporter who was caught hitting and
kicking and tripping people.
Yeah.
Children too.
Yeah. And apparently
she's just a victim, she says.
Right, but apparently Hungary is at the forefront of some serious right wing hate right now.
Oh yeah, Jobbik has been running around for about 8 years or so, and they finally got strength when they got elected into office. The same thing is going on in Ukraine. These are neo Nazis, so you know that's one aspect of it, and that's usually the justification that many of these people will give you. If they speak to a reporter, well, you know, because of the racism in Europe and they hate my religion, they hate me, blah, 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 blah. All right, yeah, that's there. But the real underlying thing with a lot of this, and this is just my opinion, is that when you look at a lot of this, ISIS is kicking ass. Why would anybody who is, you know, got any kind of, you know, common sense about them, any sense of self-fucking-awareness as a female, would leave England and go to fucking, you know, be used by these bastards in Syria or wherever the fuck they are? They are gang members from L.A. that they have found fighting in Syria. How the hell did they get there?
I know, but this kid in Kansas City, Angry, doesn't fit the mold that you just
doesn't
described.
Fit the mold, yeah.
I mean, this is a 20-year-old kid who lives in his parents' basement in a suburb of Jacksonville, Florida. You know, Joshua Ryan Goldberg.
Goldberg, yeah.
And I guess upon being busted on all of this, he explained it away as saying that what he wanted to do was lure a would-be bomber to either kill himself creating the bomb or he wanted to be able to notify the authorities of the potential terrorist and take credit for having stopped it and be a hero. I mean, is that believable? In the second half of the second decade of the 21st century, I don't know.
Well, hey, what about the two fools who started the goddamn forest fire in California several years ago? Because they wanted to report it and stop it and be heroes. Didn't the firefighter die because of that? I believe so.
But there's arson fires out here all the time. There was a guy who had a water truck that started a big-ass fire over in Hayfork just so he could get work.
Jesus. Well, meanwhile, and I thought about this when I was thinking about the the story out of Chicago of the Sikh man who got the living hell beat out of him, you know, for being a human on the planet Earth, who got in the way of some right-wing proto-Nazi's fists. Do you remember the story out of Alabama, Huntsville, Alabama, year or so back, where a good God-fearing, upstanding, law-abiding, Bible-believing police officer beat the living bejesus out of an Indian man, a grandfather? Remember that story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was just walking down the street.
Yeah. Suresh Bhai Patel, 58 years old, non-speaker of English, was visiting family there in the Huntsville area when 26-year-old Eric Parker, a member of the maybe Madison or Huntsville or whatever police department, arrived on the scene because somebody dropped the dime on Mr. Patel and proceeded to beat him so badly that he wound up flat on his back in a hospital with a bunch of tubes and hoses running in and out of him.
He's still not right.
No, he's not. Well, Eric Parker, 26, was charged in state court with misdemeanor assault. Those charges are still on hold, but his federal civil rights trial on one count of depriving a human being of his civil rights, and it even applies apparently to non-U.S. Americans, is over. The trial's over. I mean, it's all there. It's on video. I mean, beat the snot out of this man mercilessly. And the trial has ended in a mistrial because a federal jury in Alabama presumably was not able to decide whether or not Mr. Patel had civil rights. Any of them.
You know, Bob, there's something in the Constitution for people that are under the jurisdiction of the U.S. and something else that aren't, you know, they don't have like a ambassador passport or something like that, get the equal protection, I think. Isn't there? I mean, so anybody, I mean, oh, this guy was already a citizen, but he just didn't.
Well, I mean, no, he'd moved to the United States. He was going to help his son's family take care of their kids. You know, but he was going to be a grandpa. Mm-hmm. And he's walking down the street when Parker comes up, and, well, I mean, just beat hell out of the man. And it was because of a suspicious person call by someone in the neighborhood. And, the cop, 26-year-old Eric Parker, took the stand on his own behalf and said, I was only following orders. I didn't have no other option. I mean, I'm sorry he got injured and everything, but I was doing what I was supposed to do.
So what did they, so any details on the, why the mistrial?
Well, I mean, the only detail is that in a mistrial, they could not get 12 people to agree that the cop was guilty of beating the hell out of a guy that video showed him beating the hell out of. Because Alabama.
Yeah.
Because freedom.
12 rather than 6 there.
Yeah, it's a federal jury, so I mean.
Okay.
It's I think a federal pettit jury's 12. Yeah. Yeesh. Oh, and by the way, another name has been added to the hat. Thank you very kindly, Glenn, for helping out this evening. That is much appreciated. Remember, all the names go into a hat, and then after the program, I will draw a name out, and one of you will receive. After I go and find poster tubes this weekend, because they were not at my local U.S. Postal Service, after I go get the one of you will receive a Last Mountain poster. I'll let you know who it is, and you can sign it or don't sign it, whatever, that kind of thing. But so far, in the hat go Carol, Carl, Gerald, Ron, and Glenn. So anybody else wanting in on it, you've got 10 minutes to hit the PayPal button at the Contribute tab of HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. And, hey, Larry is with us this evening and has waited patiently. Good evening, Larry.
Howdy, Bob.
How are you?
I'm okay. I've been listening. The weather's been hot here. Got out a little bit earlier in the week for Labor Day. We had a salsa timba party on the street, which we do every year the last 7 years, and got to visit people and hang out for a little while. And I'm doing school. And other than that, I'm just trying to figure out a way to keep myself sane amidst all this crazy crap that is going on in the world, which is driving me up a wall. I'm hanging in there. That's all I can say.
It's all any of us can do, Larry.
You know, let me see what's going on. Berkeley's gentrifying and San Francisco's gentrifying, and I'd love to be able to take Ferg around Berkeley. Maybe I can get some stuff from the Chamber of Commerce and also from San Francisco, and send it over to you so you can get an idea of what we have here and what he might like to do or what might interest him. And then we go, maybe Dunk can come over or somebody can come over and we can go around and
I still haven't given up the idea on the big San Diego to Seattle trip. So
yeah.
But we may yet be able to make that happen. It's just that things have piled up. I got travel at the end of this month, and it might work out nicely because the nicest thing in the world would be to get out of this frozen hellscape. The Bay Area is lovely in January, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. It's cool. It's not nearly as cold as it is in other places in the country, but it's cool. It's mostly rainy.
Yeah, we could be going through El Nino hell this winter.
Yeah, it'll be. Yeah, so let me see if anything comes up, I'll certainly let you know. I'm still trying to figure out I brought this up to many people, but I'm still trying to figure out what Bill Fletcher and the guy that works for Glenn Ford was trying to they were trying to explain what those women were doing during Netroots with Bernie and with Martin O'Malley. I'm still trying to get some information to try to figure out what kind of perspective that they were coming from as far as intersectionality and.
Well, I read what was written over at BAR, and the argument seemed to be that they were trying to get in front of the money, and they were trying to get in front of the money without offending the people that the money is really behind, to wit, Hillary.
Which means. I'm completely. You were talking about their meeting with Hillary,
the business with Martin O'Malley and Netroots Nation and all of that stuff. That was a big splashy show to show the activist initiative in front of it, because the argument made in that article was that, you know, the money comes to Netroots Nation, and there's everybody there sort of auditioning to get some.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it really didn't have it really wasn't directly about either Bernie's campaign or Martin O'Malley's campaign, although people tell me that Martin O'Malley did some pretty crappy things in Baltimore. I mean, he had some pretty heavy-handed police tactics against African Americans and other minorities in Baltimore, in spite of what he was talking about, or in spite of how he was trying to appear congenial to Tia Oso. I just figure, you know, I'm going to support Bernie, and
that's where I'm camped out, and I'm not moving my tent.
Yeah, I just haven't heard anything from the official campaign yet about what the official campaign's doing. There are all kinds of people outside of the campaign that are trying to get, they're trying to develop networking.
Well, I can tell you this much. I can tell you this much, Larry. I know that Bernie is beginning to scare people in certain quarters because the attempts to slime him are ratcheting up significantly.
Well, obviously to me, he's an old line FDR Democrat. He's the kind of Democrat that, I mean, he may not be as lefty as people at Pacifica or at some, at Pacifica Radio or at some other places that have a more,
But that's always the story on the left, Larry. If Lenin arose from the grave and came to the United States, he wouldn't be left enough to support some of the so-called left purists. I mean, it's just, and I guess the right experiences the same thing. You can never be quite fascist enough, but. I'm not that familiar with it because I try not to wander around too much in that particular swamp.
Okay, so what you're suggesting is that I try not to wander around in that swamp. That I should be aware of attitudes and opinions. Try to keep my mind open about a wide variety of things, but then realize the limitations of
I think we have a winner. Absolutely. No, you got
okay,
it, Larry.
Good.
You got it.
All right.
And
okay.
as Randy in PA reminds me, time, Bob. And it is. It is about a minute and a half before the hour. Time to roll out of here. It's been a wonderful week. Thank you very kindly for helping us finish it on schedule. And hopefully we'll pick up where we left off come Moran Monday. And I'll actually have a 5-day week that I understand to be a 5-day week. It's taken me all week to realize what day, Monday holidays do that to me, especially if I take off. But thank you, everyone, for a wonderful week. Thanks for all you do to keep this program on the air. Thank you for your participation, your ideas, your emails, your calls, your tweets, your Facebooking. Thank you for making the conversation an ongoing experience that has certainly enriched and changed and improved and educated me. And I hope you get some good out of it too. Thank you very, very kindly. And thanks to everybody who makes this all go here. Our all volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net and ACACT.org, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.